Gas Station Business 101 Podcast with Shabir Hussain, Session Number 8.
Welcome to the one and only Gas Station Business 101 Podcast, where you can learn all the secrets about how to start and operate a gas station business successfully and make money. This podcast is brought to you by the good folks at CSB Academy Publishing Company. And now, here is your host, Shabir Hussain.
Hello, everyone. Thank you again for joining me in yet another episode of Gas Station Business 101 Podcast. Today, I'll be discussing the fourth P of the marketing mix, which is products. If you're joining me today for the first time, I strongly recommend you listen to episode number 6 and 7. Also, as I discussed the other parts of marketing mix in them, in episode 6, I talked about the first two components, which were place and process. Those are the two first P's of the 6 P's of marketing mix series that I'm doing here today. And on episode 7, I talked about people, also known as employees for your business. And now, today is the third part of that series, and our discussion topic today is products, also known as merchandise. What we will talk about today is how to merchandise your gas station business in a unique way so you can boost sales and at the same time attract more customers. First, let's define what is product for our business. It is the merchandising and the fuel that we carry in our stores. As I mentioned earlier, in a typical gas station C-store setting, we carry around 2,000 to about 2,500 products, which includes all the variation of some of the same products. For example, Snicker bars, Snicker candy bars come in two different sizes, regular and king size. So that is, even though it is the same product, but it is in two different shapes or form, so they'd have two different SKU or stock keeping unit. More simply, they have two different barcodes. So they're essentially two different products. You may ask, what is the big deal about products and merchandising when it comes to a C-store, since every store carries the same products, right? Well, wrong. There is no one-size-fits-all in this business. You have to differentiate your store from your next-door neighbor and the crowded market that you're in. Let's say in 1 mile vicinity of your store, there might be at least 5 different gas stations. So what makes you stand out in that crowd? Essentially, it is the product selection and the merchandising the way you do that would make you stand out among this crowded market. So product selection is the differentiator that can make you a very successful business owner, as opposed to a not-so-good product selection can tank your business to the ground. So now the obvious question you will ask is, what is a good product selection versus what is a bad product selection? And how do we know which one is good as opposed to which one is not so good when it comes to picking up the right product line for your business? That is the topic today, so that is what we will be discussing today. Now, there are 4 very important things you need to find out about your store and about your business, also about your customer base and the demographics of your store, before you can decide what and how to merchandise your business with the right products. Now, first on that list, median income level of your customer base in the area. Knowing the income level of your customer base will give you an idea if you're in a blue-collar or a white-collar neighborhood. It is a very important aspect to learn first about your market. But where do you find that information? Best place is U.S. Census Bureau, and you can do a search by zip code. Just follow the link on the show note, and you will see the site for U.S. Census Bureau. I will also give you the site. It is http://www.census.gov. or you can try http://quickfacts.census.gov. This is a very helpful and informative site, so my advice would be that you bookmark these two sites and go back to it anytime you need information on your store or any other prospective stores that you're looking to buy, so you can get all the demographics information from these sites, and it is all free. Once you know what is the average income level of your customer base, you can then figure out the following. If your customer base is predominantly blue or white collar, or is it a mixed neighborhood? As I'm sure you can understand, the buying behavior is very different between these two groups. Now, number two on that list is race and ethnicity of the customer base. Yes, we will have to talk about the very sensitive issue of race here. I know, but stay with me and I'll explain why. Race can play a big role in your merchandising efforts for your store too. And again, I will explain more in detail soon. But first, let me point you to where you can find that information for your area. Once again, direct your browser to the US Census site that I just gave you, and you can find this very vital piece of information on that site as well. Number three, age of the population of your customer base. Similarly, age of the population plays a big role as far as their buying habits. Thus, your merchandising effort changes too. And again, you can find the median age of the population of your area from the same census site. Now, gather up all this information and we'll talk about how to put them in good use. Number four, location of your store. The fourth element is easy to figure out. You don't have to visit a website to know this. Just look around you. I'm sure you already know if your store is in the city or in the inner city or in a rural community. Most big and successful retailers do have similar market research methods that they practice as a part of their product selection strategy. Now, let me start by giving you some examples. One big example is Walmart. They're the biggest retailer in this world. So they, of course, have the best merchandising and the best marketing skills compared to any other retailers. To give you a clear picture of how merchandising is done in big retail companies, let's take a look at three Walmarts. We're going to bring in three Walmarts in three different locations, just as an example. Now, one, let's say, is in a rural Mississippi area. And the next one is in El Paso, Texas, which is a border town very close to Mexican border. And the last one is in China. Walmart is in China, just in case if you didn't know that, but Walmart has opened and doing business in Chinese market. Now, do you think every Walmart carries the same product line in every store they operate in the US or in China? The answer is no. A Walmart in China will carry vastly different products than the one, say, in Mississippi or the one in Texas. I think we can all agree on that, that Chinese market is vastly different than US. Now, let's talk about some of the differences between the store in rural Mississippi and the one in El Paso, Texas. Now, if you are to go into one of these stores, or both of these stores for that matter, and let's say you're browsing the aisles. In El Paso, Texas store, you may notice products and foods that are more Spanish influenced than, say, the store in Mississippi. But why do you think they're so different? The answer is demographics. This is where race, the income level, the age, and all of those things that we spoke about comes into play. In this case, the race or the ethnicity is the number one differentiator. There are more Spanish-speaking people in El Paso, Texas than there are in Mississippi. When you walk down each shopping aisles in both of these stores, you will notice subtle differences, but not in every product. Not every product will be different. Not every aisle or every shelves will be completely different. No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying every aisle will be pretty much the same, but there will be products in between that will be different from one store to the other. For example, if you walk the milk and the juice aisle, you may see rice milk alongside regular milk, which you will not see in the Mississippi store. Walk to the juice section and you will see guava juice, mango juice, or tamarind juice next to the orange juice in the El Paso store, which you will not see in the store in Mississippi. If you walk the fresh vegetable aisles in El Paso store, you may find fresh green coconut and cilantro and radish in a bigger selection than, say, the store in Mississippi. I hope I'm making my point across. So, as you can see, selecting the right products based on your immediate neighborhood clientele is the key to your success. Remember, it is the products that you carry in your store which attracts people to your store. If a customer knows you carry a certain type of bread or tobacco or cigarette or beer that is not carried by your competitors, then he or she will come to your store every day and shop with you. When doing the layout of your store and product selection, you don't have to go item by item, but you have to just tweak a few notches to make it unique and appropriate for that exact neighborhood. It is essentially like having a custom-fitted suit versus a generic store-bought suit. The custom-fit one fits you better because it is made just for you, when the generic one is made for anyone who has similar body structure as you but not exactly like you. Now, to give you more in-depth analysis, I'll dive a little deeper into the product categories and talk about each one of those and what and how they can vary by location. Typically, most C-stores have product or departments for cigarettes and tobacco, beer and wine, drinks, grocery, automotive supplies and motor oil, and probably deli food if you are equipped with deli. Once again, I will take three gas stations in three vastly different neighborhoods and talk about how their product selection may vary from one to the other. Let's assume store one is in an ethnic mixed inner city location. Store two is located in a rural countryside location. And store three is in the fancy part of your town. First, take store one for example. In the cigarette and tobacco category, you will carry more varieties of menthol type cigarettes than any other two stores. And then on the tobacco side, you will carry more selection of single cigars that are priced around $1 to $1.50 range. In the beer and wine side, you will notice you're carrying more of a certain type of beer and wine that are mostly sold as singles, either can or bottles, than any other stores, other two stores, as a matter of fact. Now, similarly, your grocery selection will vary widely too. In this store, you may have to carry more canned meat, which are ready to eat, and that sells for less than $2. And then on the candy selection, you will notice more selection of the candies that are less than a dollar, or sometimes two for a dollar candy bags. So you may see a huge selection of those. Now, let's do the same for store two, which is in the rural area. In this store, your cigarettes will be mostly non-menthol, full-flavored cigarettes that are sub-generic brands or generic brands. And now, as for your tobacco, you will notice you sell mostly generic canned tobaccos or dips, but not much of single cigars. So you have to make more room to put more selection of this type of tobacco and this type of cigarettes in your store. As for beer and wine, you will see you sell mostly bigger package, cheaper beer like suitcases or 18 packs and not much of the smaller packages like 6 packs. Similarly, all other product categories will be little different than the previous one. Now, as for the store number 3, again, this is in your fancy part of town. And in this store, you may notice your cigarette and tobacco will be different once again. Here, you may see you sell mostly high-valued branded cigarettes like Marlboros or Camels. And as for the tobacco, you will be noticing that you sell mostly the branded tobacco that are higher priced than the generic ones. And you may have requests for higher priced cigars, and not the dollar ones, but I'm talking about cigars that cost $5 to $10, sometimes $20. On the beer side, you will notice you sell mostly high-end six-pack premium or imported beer versus the generic cheaper beer. Same goes for wine. You will notice you sell a lot of the $15 bottled or higher valued wine in this store. In candy section, you may notice you're selling mostly premium candy and gum and not much of a dollar candy or $2 for $1 candy. So as you can see, there is no cookie cutter setup that fits every store. It is unique for each location and each business. One important thing to remember in this process is when you first merchandise your store based on your research, it is not done for good. You have to give it 3 months and then analyze your sales and go back and retweak things that needs improvement. And I'll explain in a bit what I'm talking about here. Part of this improvement process is talking and getting feedback from your customer. This is one very important thing you can do for your business and for your merchandising effort and product selection. It is a good idea to keep a log handy, or a book for that matter, or a yellow or white notebook, where every time a customer asks for something or look for an item that you do not carry, write it down or have your cashier write it down so you can order it next time. But just make sure to let this customer know that you're taking their request seriously and you will have it for them very next week. This behavior can make a customer feel important and special, and trust me, he or she will be a loyal customer to you and your store for years to come. We're not going to talk about the biggest product you carry in your store, which is gasoline or fuel. Yes, you heard me right. We are not going to cover gasoline or fuel in this episode, even though it is part of what you sell or the biggest part of what you sell. But since we cannot pick or choose a brand when it comes to your fuel, I have decided to leave gasoline and fuel out of the equation when it comes to product selection and merchandising. We will tackle fuel and how to price fuel in the next episode. Now, let's recap what we have talked about so far. Regardless if you're merchandising a new store that you just built or if you're merchandising an existing store you just bought, remember, you're not alone in this. There are vendors who will help you in this process, but you have to communicate with each and every one of those vendors and get their feedback and ask them what they sell the most in your neighborhood. This can give you a very good idea about how you need to set your store up. So first, you gather up information from those four items I mentioned regarding demographics. You get the median income level of the people around you, find out their race and age, and lastly, figure out if your store is in a rural versus city versus inner city location. Once you have this information, you should have a rough idea based on our discussion as to what product you should concentrate on the most. Then you talk to your vendors and find out what they sell the most in their product line in your local neighborhood. Now, if a vendor mentions he sells 100 cases of something in a store 20 miles from you, don't pay attention, as the area may be totally different than where you are. So ask them about your own neighborhood and not about the whole city. Now, as I said, you're not alone in this. Each of your vendor will guide you through this process. And remember, it is in their best interest also to make suggestion about the product that sells in your neighborhood. Because if you sell their product and your sales go up high, in return, you'll buy more from them. So their sales will increase as well. So their goal is to help you increase your sales. That way, in turn, they will increase theirs. So their profitability goes up along with yours. So do listen to the vendors. But oftentimes, as I said, some of the vendors I've noticed in my business life that they get carried away and they suggest products that do not sell in your area, but it may be selling at a different location, different neighborhood. So that is where your research has to come into play. And when they suggest product, you need to see if that jives with whatever research you have done so far about your own location. Now, before you start ordering your products for the first time, one last thing you need to do, which is go visit your local competitors, especially the ones that seem successful and busy. Go see how they merchandise their store and take some mental notes and try and see their product selection. When you take a look at their product selection, what I mean by that is what is on the eye level, because that is where the focus point goes to for every customer. When they walk into a store, let's say somebody is browsing your candy aisle, the best selling candy should be at the eye level, which is on the higher on the shelves, maybe the top shelf or the second from the top shelf. Take a look and see if their most expensive candies are on that shelf, or if it's cheaper candies or some other bags of candies. These are the things will give you a direction, a sense of direction, and a sense of selection that you need to do for your store. Now, remember I said come back in 3 months and reevaluate your merchandising, right? Yes, in 3 months, you need to sit down with all your invoices, all the invoices that you paid for, bought the products, and I'm sure by now you will have sorted out your invoices in categories. Let's say if it's beer, you will have a separate file for all the beer purchases. Then you have separate for groceries and so on and so forth. So once you sit down, let's say you're looking at your grocery selection and you have your grocery invoices. In 3 months, sit down and take a look and see what you ordered the most. For example, take a 4-foot section of your shelves. Let's say in the candy section. Take a look how often you ordered Twix candy versus how often you ordered your Snicker bars. And then you may be able to see that there are 1, 2, maybe 3, maybe 4, maybe 5 items in that 4-foot candy section that you did not order at all in 3 months, or maybe you have reordered just once. This is where you need to pay attention. You need to write those items down because they are slow moving items. And your goal in 3 months would be to isolate those slow moving items in your store. In this process, what you're trying to find out is the sale per square footage also. In order to figure this number out, first you need to know the square footage of your sales floor. I'm not talking about the whole store, I'm talking about your sales floor. Let's say your sales floor is 1400 square footage. Take your monthly sales without the fuel and divide that by the total sales floor square footage. So if you had $70,000 sale the previous month and you have 1400 square footage sales floor, your sales per square footage is 70,000 divided by 1400, which is $50 per square footage per month. Now, this is an important number to remember. And next thing what we need to do is remember, as I talked about, isolating the slower item versus the fast moving items. Now, look through your shelves and merchandising. And as I said, try to find out the slow moving items. And once you isolate these items, you need to replace them with something similar, hoping, even though you wouldn't know if the similar item that you're going to bring in would sell or not. But let's say you try a different item, see if that moves. Again, in 3 months' time, if you see that hasn't moved, then what you need to see is in that 4-foot section, there are some candy that is moving really fast. For example, Snicker bar always outsells most other candy bars. Now, if you have a couple of slow-moving items around Snicker bar, what I would do is I would try some other candies to see if they move. Let's say I have tried three different types of candy. None of them moved. So what I should do at that point is put two boxes of Snicker or three boxes of Snicker side by side. So what I'm doing is I'm telling people that this is my best-selling item, so I have more of it. Now, every time you tweak things like this, where you move the slowing items out of the shelves and bring in new items, you take a sales figure again and divide that by your sales floor and figure out if all these tweaks and changes that you made has increased your sales per square footage dollar amount. Let's say the first time you checked it was $50 a square foot per month. In 3 months, when you tweaked all of these, you checked it again and it became $53 a square footage. So you see, you're improving per square foot sales. And that should be your goal, because in this type of business, every space counts when it comes to your sales floor. And your goal should be to maximize that sales. In return, the profit will go up as well. So your goal should be to maximize sales out of the sales floor that you have. So, and again, I'm not saying any empty square footage that you see in your store, you need to fill that up with something. No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying the usable space that you have on your shelves, maximize sales out of those shelves. Now, a typical rule of thumb is if your reorder frequency is 6 to 8 weeks for most merchandise, then it is considered a slow seller. For example, you order Snicker bar every week because you have that invoice and you're looking at it and you're saying, okay, I order one box or two box every week. But then there is a candy bar that you order every 6 to 7 weeks. Then essentially that is a slow moving item. And anytime you spot an item that you have to order, let's say every 2 months, then chances are that is a slow item. You most likely need to get rid of that item and bring something new, hoping the new item will be selling faster and more. Now, we haven't talked about one important factor when it comes to merchandising, or when you're trying to decide how to merchandise your store properly, that there are grocery companies that you may want to hire who will supply you from cigarettes, tobacco, even to the motor oil. But when choosing the right company for you, it is best to meet with at least 3 or 4 of these companies and their salespeople and ask them about their price book and how their pricing structure is, how they offer credit, and what is their return policy is. And then let them know that you will decide, and you'll let one of them know that you picked them over somebody else. But before you do that, what I have usually done is I would sit with 3 or 4 of these books and pick out items from the book where it's the same item in every book. Let's say Snicker bar again. And I would see how much this company A's price is versus company B versus company C. So I would randomly pick out about 50 different items and see who's cheaper. Then I also would like to see who carries the biggest selection of merchandising. So in case I find some slow moving items, if a company A has a bigger selection on candies and sodas and groceries, that means I can change to a different selection more easily compared to a smaller company that has less selection in their product line. And now, as far as grocery companies, I do recommend having one, because it takes a lot of your stress and hard work that you have to go buy different things from different places. This is one-stop shopping. So you can focus on more important things in your store by having a grocery company that brings you at least 50% of your inventory by one truck. But one important thing to remember when picking a grocery company that is right for you, there are 3 different types of grocery companies. One the number one should be, or number one is the national chains like the McLean's. And there are a few other names that I do not recall at the moment. And then there are regional companies that are covering, let's say, 4, 5, 6 different states. So they're more regional and not national. And one example would be H.T. Hackney. Now, and the third one is more local, where they only service your state or part of your state. So they're rather small companies. And sometimes even though smaller companies offer the best prices, they may not have the biggest product selection. And they may not have the biggest sales and merchandising force. So when deciding what company to go with, there are a few factors to comes to play. First, of course, pricing. And even though bigger companies seems to be more expensive at the front, if you negotiate right, you may get their prices to go down even lower than your local competitor. The reason is bigger company buys more, so they have more buying power, so they can buy at a cheaper price. One big advantage of going with a regional or a national company is that they have a big merchandising team that can come and help you merchandise your store. And they're usually very knowledgeable. So if you do your research and talk to this merchandiser, you can custom build a merchandising shelves with them, as they're knowledgeable about product line and you're knowledgeable about your market. So if you can combine this two, you can have a uniquely merchandised store that will be very profitable for you. Now, the third element is, remember, the first one is pricing, second one is merchandising, and the third for these companies is return policy. You need to know if you find some slow moving items, let's say 3 months or 6 months down the road, and then you notice the products expired. It can be candy bars or drinks or cookies. What do you do with them? Do you throw them out? No. A good grocery company will take those back as credit, and you can buy something new with that credit. So essentially, you're not losing money by taking something out of your shelves, because they're guaranteeing this product. So I would say if you go with a company, make sure they offer these three things. Another reason you should have a grocery company to buy from is that the merchandiser and your salespeople from that grocery company keeps up with the trend of products or the new trends that are coming to the market that you're not aware of, because you're busy running your store. So you don't know what is coming out next. Let's say if Bluebell ice cream is coming up with a new flavor, you wouldn't know. The salesperson from the ice cream company will tell you, right? But similarly, if Budweiser is coming up with a new beer, you don't have to worry about it because the salesperson will tell you. But now, if a cookie is being rebranded and repackaged, or there is a new type of Oreo cookies, how would you know that? There is no salesperson from Oreo. That is where your grocery salespeople comes in, because they will tell you, or they will send you flyers that says, these are our new cookie selections that are being very hot in the market nowadays. So you can be the trendsetter in your market by bringing in the newest merchandise that nobody else has and be unique in that market and stand out in that crowd. Just remember, merchandising is an ongoing process. You have to make little changes every week and keep up with the trends of all the new and upcoming products. Before we move on to the email segment of our show, I have a little announcement to make. I recently released the second edition of my book on gas station business that I wrote and published back in 2012. The first edition was my first try as a writer. And as I mentioned once before, I'm not a writer. I never was. But I wrote a book. So obviously there were errors and some typos. And to my surprise, Microsoft Word did not pick those up, even though I ran the grammar check, the spelling check many, many times. There were still few of those left. So once again, my sincere apology to everyone who read my book and found errors. Now, in this edition, I did add and clarified a few things in most every chapter. I also updated some of the charts and graphs, especially inside the business plan. I'm sure some of you readers out there may still find an error or two, and I'll go ahead and ask for your forgiveness ahead of time. This way, you at least know that I have tried my best to rectify all the errors. Today, I will not answer any question from emails. Instead, I want to announce two names of two great individuals that gave me five-star review on Amazon on my book. First, a person goes by the name My Right Eye wrote, and I quote, "I really appreciated the conversational approach to the writing of this book that made it easier for me to read and comprehend. This is a very insightful book about how to operate a successful business from the ground up, even if it isn't the gas station business industry. There is a lot of great educational information here for the entrepreneurial-minded individual," unquote. Now, the second review is from Lindsay. She wrote, "This book was extremely helpful. I love the author's clear and concise voice and all his helpful tips. He offers a lot of practical advice that I'm really benefited from. I especially enjoyed the chapter on financing. Overall, I highly recommend this one," end quote. Thanks to both of you. You two sure made my day, and I do appreciate it wholeheartedly. Now, it is the book time. As you know, I recommend a book every week, and this week's book is called The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People: Powerful Lessons in Personal Change. This best-selling book is by Stephen R. Covey. It is a book about personal change and growth. This book goes deep into how we can have a paradigm shift first in order to be able to accept and welcome those 7 great habits. I know you will thank me later if you get to read this book. Now that we're at the end of today's episode, I'll ask you to go to my blog at gasstationbusiness101.com and sign up for my newsletter so I can keep you informed of all the upcoming news and changes via email. This way, you will never miss anything important. Also, lastly, if you enjoy listening to my podcast show, I would love to see a review on iTunes from you. Thank you so much once again for joining me. Take care, and I will talk to you in next episode.
This has been the one and only Gas Station Business 101 podcast with your host, Shabir Hossein. This podcast was brought to you by CSB Academy Publishing Company. Be sure to join us next time as we share with you the secrets about how to start and operate a gas station business successfully and make money.